conversation with queer identified writers about their works and lives. Welcome to Queer Words. This is Wayne Goodman, and on this episode, I have the delightful pleasure of conversing with Sam Wise. Hey, Sam.
Hey, how you doing, Wayne?
Great. Can we start by having you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yes. Well, it goes like this. I'm a musician. I'm a songwriter. Now I'm a published author, and I'm also a painter. I had my first paid music gig when I was 14, playing guitar with a jazz ensemble made up of five really old guys, 40-year-olds, all men. Since then, I've made six recordings. I've also worked as a professional photographer. For a time, I was a first mate on a 70-foot private vessel on Puget Sound, where we did party charters and also marine science cruises for school groups. They actually let me take the helm, and that was alarming. I grew up on a farm in Iowa. I can milk a cow, and I can castrate lambs. That could come in handy. You never know. I've lived in Chicago, had a rock band up there. I've lived in Seattle in the Puget Sound region for most of my life. I had a horse farm with my then spouse. We raised dressage horses. I've lived for a few years, most recently, in Isla Mirada, which is the middle key of the Florida Keys. Now, there's a lot more, but that's a good intro.
This is Queer Words, and I do ask my guests what qualifies you as queer.
I wonder if I'm properly qualified. I don't know. I suppose a 25-year monogamous relationship with another woman might qualify. I've enjoyed lifelong friendships with men, some sexual relationships with a few. And what I found was eventually the man wanted to be pretty alpha. That shows up, and I have never had the need to be subjugated.
When did you first accept being queer?
My first knowledge of what life was about. I was almost 2.5 years old. The neighbor teenager would come over in the summer and set me on her bicycle, and I would pretend that I was doing the driving of the bicycle. I adored her. That set my life in motion. This is silly. I've never thought about it much. Just went like, oh, this is nice. Okay, here's what we're doing.
Who might be some of your queer hero figures, or queeros, or sheros?
I've never really had any heroes. This is a pretty short answer. Certainly, there are a lot of people I admire. In terms of queer people I've admired, I don't think there's anybody I admired more than Harvey Milk. He was intense, strong, and intelligent. And to have heroes, you set the stage for disappointment. Unless you choose a dead hero, they're always good.
What about literary influences?
With the recent death of Al Jaffe, it occurred to me, oddly, one of my biggest influences regarding literature started with Mad Magazine when I was a little kid, because the writing moved along so nicely and the pictures were fun, but the words were always great. The humor, that honed my sense of humor, that and my dad. The way that the people that worked on the magazine were superior observers of human nature. And that got my attention. And then as I became an adult, my influences were John Irving, Kurt Vonnegut, of course. I think I've read everything he ever wrote at least 3 times. Probably the most peculiar influence is Richard Brautigan. He was a pretty weird fellow, and the writing was very peculiar, but there's something about it that felt musical in a way. Boy, does that sound strange. I have everything that he wrote that's published, but the number one influence on the way I write is probably Tom Robbins. That's my list.
What inspired you to begin writing?
I grew up on a farm. My brother is 7 years older than me. It was often I'm on my own. I used to bug my mom. Sometimes I'd say, what can I do? I'm bored. She goes, go outside. Use your imagination. Uh-oh. So I did. I've always loved stories. My dad, who was a farmer, he was an extraordinary storyteller. And his specialty was oral histories of the family before you were born. He would tell the stories so well that I would recount them to friends. I say, yeah, my great aunt, she used to nurse her twins at the same time. And I went, wait a minute, that was my grandmother's sister. There's no way I have a memory of that. oh, this is how you implant memory. Repeated storytelling. It was so vivid, and descriptions of all the people around and what it looked like and smelled like. It was like everything became real. Dad was pretty good at that. My parents always read aloud to us because we didn't have TV till I was 6 years old or something. We read a lot. My brother taught me to read when I was 3 years old by letting me sit on his lap, and he would read either the Sergeant Fury comics or Archie, and I would follow the words. I vivid memory. One day he mispronounced the word danger. He read, and he was in danger. I just died laughing. I laughed so hard. Now I feel guilty about that because you mispronounce words. It's the way it happens. The fact that I saw the word and knew it at three, that was pretty good testament to my brother's ability to be patient with an annoying little sister. With the comics and Dad, I immediately was hooked on stories. I didn't write anything, just learned to observe people and what was going on around me and the place. A lot of observing the place that these stories took place in. I had a lot of distractions. It took me till I was 30 years old till I started writing, and that started with songwriting. Now it seems like a big rock rolling down the hillside. We'll see where it leads now that I got the first novel out.
How does queerness impact your writing?
It makes me sharpen my awareness. When I was writing Abstraction, newly released novel, I was intently aware of keeping my characters in the light of normalcy. And I think I did it to the point of where I didn't show who the queer characters were until the very end of the book. Their sexuality wasn't that germane to the tale until the very end. Then it became a thing suddenly for a couple of the characters. When I revealed them, I think it was quite sweet and quite normal. In fact, it might be the only normal thing about the book, now that I think about it. To sum that up, I want people to see that we are queer people, put their pants on one leg at a time.
Those who wear pants.
Yes, yes. Maybe I should be more shoes, put their shoes on. No, sometimes I put them both on at once. Okay, maybe we're not all that normal.
When it comes to writing process, are you someone who likes to start with an outline and work from that structure, or do you sit down and start typing, or somewhere in the middle?
I am old-fashioned. I have a box full of 3x5 note cards. When I was writing Abstraction, it was during a time that my spouse and I were driving back and forth from Seattle to Miami because her father had developed a dementia and some other health issues and had moved out of his house. We were taking care of the house, getting it ready. The family was going to rent it for a time before selling it. We were down there preparing it. We rented a house in Key Largo at that time because we knew some folks there and didn't want to live in Miami while taking care of the house. I spent a lot of time in the little house we rented. That's where this book was primarily written, which is strange because it's set in the Pacific Northwest, but I had that so ingrained in me, I could write about that anywhere. In terms of the outline, I would write all this information about each character and I would tack it to a big cardboard, like a 20x24 cardboard. When we would hit the road, I would throw that in the camper and that whole message was there with me. I'm a tactile person, so doing it all on computer, I become disoriented more than usual. I like to sit down at the desk or wherever I am or a kitchen table, and there it all is in front of me without pressing a button. I've just got the information there. I start with an outline of the story. I went to bed one night and I dreamed Abstraction in its entirety. I woke up the next day and I went, what the fuck is this? This can't be happening. This is crazy. I got busy, and over the next couple days, I wrote the outline, made changes. But it took me 2 years because of all the traveling and straightening things out. The dream wasn't totally perfect. That was how that formed up. As I say, old-fashioned, I use an outline that I can see. It kept me from making some major mistakes because you forget things like, where's this going?
If people are interested in buying your book, where can they find it?
It can be found online at any of your favorite booksellers that sell online and the brick and mortar stores, the little independent stores. Go to your favorite independent bookseller and order the book, and everybody's happy, especially me and my publisher.
I'm hoping you have a bit of your writing you can share with us.
I do. I'm going to read this short passage from my newly published first novel, which is titled Abstraction. I'm going to read chapter 6 beginning because there's a sentence at the very end of this passage that I think says something really important. We get to learn a couple things about the main character, Ren, the painter, and her friend, Julia, who's also a painter. They live within walking distance of each other. That makes life fun for them. But it shows Ren is having a little trouble getting in her groove, and it goes like this. Blood red paint drooled from the end of a bent dinner fork as Ren walked it around a small canvas, 20 by 24 inches of cobalt blue, cadmium yellow, and black. Now she punctuated the painting with red, a red that no matter what she did, refused to budge from a somewhat gruesome arterial glow. She didn't fight it. Ren had figured out after 32 of these paintings not to fight the will of the paint, to simply flow with the dance that each painting demanded. Finishing off the red, she stopped, unsure of her next move. Something wasn't right. She wasn't feeling the dance of this painting. Ren put on Bach's Third Brandenburg Concerto and watched the painting. Nothing. She walked around the canvas. Nothing. She had hit the painter's equivalent of writer's block, and she knew the cure. She needed to look at a face instead of a canvas, to hear another human voice, not just the scuff of her boots on the canvas-covered floor. She pressed a speed dial button on her phone. Julia, let's go have a drink. 20 minutes later, Julia and Ren sat in the local martini bar. It was cozy and dimly lit, the perfect atmosphere for properly reacquainting oneself with vodka and gin. Julia sipped at her martini and ate the olive, a faraway look in her eye. Ren ordered a second blueberry martini while she finished her first. She wondered at Julia's uncharacteristic silence, thinking maybe it had to do with the drink ratio. This was Julia's third. Are you thinking about your ex-husband again? Ren ventured, and Julia laughed out loud. No, the poor dumb bastard. She sipped a bit of her drink and gulped down the whole thing. You know, I did love him, still do on some level. We might have been able to come to some arrangement if he had been honest. Ren asked, do you think you'll marry again or even date someone? Only if whoever he is has the courtesy to tell me up front that he's kind of mostly gay. Julia tipped back her martini glass, working to extract one more drop. They sat in silence for a few minutes, watching the people at the other tables, listening to the musical clinking of glassware and the hive drone of conversation. What about you? Julia asked, an olive skewer clamped between her teeth. Ren frowned. You know, I'm getting pretty comfortable in my life. I don't think I want to throw the monkey wrench of love into the works anymore. Julia choked on her first sip of her fresh martini. Monkey wrench of love. Really, Ren? Is that your view of an intimate romantic relationship? Julia laughed. She kept repeating, monkey wrench of love, and laughing until she needed to stop for a deep breath. Are you finished? Ren asked, frowning. I have deep and intimate relationships with my work. You know that. You have that too. Ren, work is work. You need someone to talk to, someone to hold you. You certainly need to get laid. You have to take a chance sometime. Ren smiled and shook her head. Sometimes my art holds me just tight enough. They fell into their own private thoughts for a few minutes, studying their drinks. Running an index finger around the rim of her empty glass, Julia said, "What is an artist? What is it that we do?" Ren searched the ceiling. I suppose we're interpreters, she replied after a moment. Interpreters of nature, of society, interpreters of myth. Okay, maybe. Maybe we use symbols and metaphor to help explain the universe. Okay, interpreters of our world, Julia agreed flatly. She leaned back in her chair and looked intently at Ren. Then, lurching forward in her chair and leaning across the table, she said, I think we also interpret the supernatural world, the hidden universe. At least I think you do. I think you are making visible the invisible.
What's your involvement in the queer communities?
Many years ago, when I lived in Seattle as a musician, I performed a lot in some of the women's music venues and did a lot of fundraisers back in the day when AIDS was decimating everything. In the last several years, though, I have to confess, I've been an absolute hermit. The horse farm kept us pretty tied down, and then traveling for my father-in-law's house issues, changing residence to Florida, that was pretty time-consuming.
How do you use social media to promote your work?
I'm on it every day. I love social media, except I haven't really figured out Twitter. Okay, how does this work? I have no idea. I post something and then I never see it again. And I don't know if anybody's ever seen it. I avoid Twitter. I'm sure I can find someone who will educate me. I post something germane to the book every day on Facebook and Instagram. When I'm painting, I paint new work on both of those media. Facebook has been fabulous for that. I've sold quite a number of paintings simply because I posted the picture. I've got collectors and I've got paintings in collections in Switzerland and Israel, and all over the country here. That's been dandy. And I hope it helps the book. I think it will. Certainly when I have a book signing event, social media is essential. It seems to be working out. People comment and I have a large number of followers. I'm sitting here alone in my house looking at dust bunnies while somebody's enjoying what I'm posting.
What do you like to read?
I love this question. My favorite thing to read, it's embarrassing probably, I love detective stories because they're engaging and sometimes ridiculous. My favorite writer in the genre of detective stories is a Swedish writer named Hagen Nezer. His books, I love them because the pace, it's just a snail's pace. You can absorb every detail. He writes the most beautiful descriptions of the landscapes that the horrible, bloody murders are happening in. The contrast is so interesting. It makes me think. When I was 19, I had a really awful car accident, which gave me a permanent dent in my forehead. It was a beautiful, sunny spring day, and kawam. This awful thing happened. I've been thinking about this for most of my life, how just because things look like they're perfect, anything can happen anytime. It doesn't have to be a dark, stormy night. Hagen Nezer, his books are like that. It's never a dark, stormy night. It's a beautiful day in a beautiful landscape. Also, I keep reading over and over the books of Edward Abbey. He was not a great writer, but his sense of place is so good that I keep reading the stuff because his descriptions of a landscape that I have spent some time in and know pretty well, it makes me happy.
You have any words of wisdom to pass along to other queer writers?
Sure. The most important thing to know is when you write, be honest. Find the joy in your own living and your writing. Know that the words have meaning. You can erase and write over. Just be honest and keep cranking out the stories and don't panic. No need for panic. It's going to be all right. That's my words of wisdom.
I will say thank you, Sam Wise.
Thank you, Wayne. Thanks for having me on. I enjoyed this very much.